And our first company is GeoEye, which was ranked number 10 on Deloitte's Technology Fast 50. Please welcome to the LeaderSpot studio the CEO, President, and Director of GeoEye, Matthew O'Connell. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's good to be here.
Now, GeoEye Incorporated provides satellite and aerial imagery and geospatial information. So explain better what you do for people.
Rebecca, we're one of the leading producers of information that we bring down from satellites and airplanes that we feed to people like Google Earth. It helps build maps. We help people map, measure, and monitor the world. Our biggest clients are probably the U.S. government. We do a lot of work for different U.S. government agencies. We also work for international governments, a lot of the American allies, and we work for commercial companies, whether they're in agriculture, infrastructure monitoring, forestry. We're getting more and more involved in things like using our forestry applications to monitor carbon trading, for instance.
And so part of your job has been developing the new markets to enter into.
Yeah, it's still a developing industry. It's really exciting to be in it because President Clinton declassified satellite technology and said that we could use imagery techniques for non-military purposes. That obviously took a big rise after 9/11 because we all realized we had to know more about our neighbors. So the government put a lot of money on contract and helped build two new generation satellites, one for us and one for another American company. We launched our new satellite, GeoEye-1, in September of last year. It's the world's best, highest resolution commercial imagery satellite in the world.
I saw that, the highest resolution and most accurate commercial Earth imaging satellite. How did you accomplish that?
Well, I'm not sure. I wish I could say I knew how. I was sent down right after 9/11 by Merrill Lynch and J.P. Morgan to restructure the predecessor company. The industry was in formation back then. It wasn't doing terribly well. I came in, and I had been a private equity investor in New York, and before that I was a mergers and acquisitions lawyer. I just put in place the usual disciplines you need in a small company to help it grow. We fixed the financial situation. I put it into bankruptcy in 2002. I brought it out in 2004. And in September 2004, we beat a combination of Lockheed, Raytheon, and L3 to win a huge government contract. And I can't remember quite how we did, but it really put us on the map.
And you were, talk to me about this timeline, this 02-04. You were CEO of GeoEye's predecessor, Orb Image.
Yes, Orb Image was a subsidiary of Orbital Sciences. And it had been struggling, and I came in and just fixed some of the financial arrangements. And the hardest part was probably keeping people together because we had a talented bunch of folks, and they could see that things were struggling. But we managed to keep them all together, fixed the balance sheet. As I said, we got out of bankruptcy January 1, 2004. September 2004, we won this $500 million contract. Then another challenge was in the summer of 2005, we had to raise $250 million. That's when Ford and GM were first downgraded. Obviously, they've had some downturns since then, but it was hard for a company just a year out of bankruptcy to go out and raise $250 million. We did it, and then we turned around and bought the biggest company in the industry, so we've kind of gone from being last in the race to first, which is a lot of fun.
So you're excited by this uncertainty that you experience. I mean, some CEOs can't operate well in that environment.
I had a great teacher. I worked for a guy named Chuck Dolan, who invented HBO and was one of the pioneers of cable. And we always got along because before I went to law school, I was a musician. And Chuck said to me once, I think I understand. You create an orderly framework for the disorderly forces of creative energy to function effectively. And it's really, it's not that much different from being on a bandstand. You get brilliant people to work together in a way that's productive and harmonious and not just chaos. And the world is chaotic. The technology world is certainly chaotic. Gosh, you look at the financial world, it is more than chaotic mm-hmm. these days. We're used to uncertainty, and if it's like the Kipling poem, if you can keep your head about you when everybody else is losing theirs, you can get a lot done and make a lot of money. We've grown from 60 to 500 people in the past 5 years.
Wow. So you knew this was always going to work?
Well, I did. Nobody else did. I give my wife a lot of credit. She's the chief historian of the History Channel. So she has a terrific job. We both came out of media. And she said, okay, so you're going to leave a firm on Park Avenue, leave your equity in New York, and take equity in a company that you're going to put into bankruptcy to to run a company that nobody wants to be CEO of, and you're going to live in the Holiday Inn in Dulles Airport. She said, if you see something, I believe in you. So roll the dice.
Wow.
And we'll go for it. I did think that post 9/11, if you could help our country and our allies know more about their neighbors, you had to make some money. What I didn't foresee was the whole growth of location-based services. You know, there was no Google Earth back then.
Yeah.
It's only 5 years old. Google Earth has been a terrific shot in the arm for the industry. We entered into an agreement to be exclusive to Google with this new satellite. We only distribute our imagery online through them. Offline, we deal with a lot of people, but online, it's only through Google. They're a terrific partner. The founders came to our launch in September. I can't say enough good things about them. They've really helped us.
Wow. And I have to say good things about your wife, too, right, for believing in you?
Oh, I always give her credit, because without that sense of support in the background, I wouldn't have taken the leap of faith. Now, in hindsight, the leap of faith looks brilliant. You know, the company was worth, the best offer I got in bankruptcy was $32 million. And now our equity's worth, call it roughly $350 million. Mm. You add the debt. So we're about a $600 million market cap now.
Wow. Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
For doing it. Do you, is it kind of boring now?
No, I mean, you know, we're still tiny. You compare us to the folks in our industry. We compete against people, some of the big, when we're hiring, for instance, we compete against Lockheed and Raytheon and General Dynamics. We did something creative. When you don't have any money, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Frank Zappa wasn't. And you go out, and we had to create a foundation so that we could do some good things. We give our imagery away to leading universities. The kids at Georgia Tech are working with Diane Fossey's Gorilla in the Mist Institute. The kids at MIT are working on urban planning and climate change in Mexico City. That's good. Our employees all feel like we're doing something good, but frankly, it also has a terrific help when we go to recruit, because we get to the campuses and the kids all say, oh, GOI, I've been using your imagery for a long time.
Oh, wow.
The kids are using real imagery to solve some of the world's real problems. We also have a great R&D tie to some of the world's leading universities. So we have a great dialogue. We can call these people and say, have you ever thought about this? And they frankly call us and ask us totally off-the-wall questions. But that's kind of how you advance the ball in thinking.
Excellent, excellent. We're speaking with Matt O'Connell and talking with GOI here on The Leader Spot. Now, you launched this new satellite in September.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they take a while to kind of build and put up and that kind of thing. So how did... Tell me about that process and that timeline for you.
Well, we won the contract in September 2004, and we took 4 years to build the satellite, which is kind of average for these kind of things. It's a little faster than most government programs. And launched in September, and we are in the final stages of calibrating the accuracy. Our resolution is now better than anybody else's on the commercial side. It's just wonderful. We can take a picture and show you home plate at National Stadium, something as small as 16 inches from space.
Wow.
It takes a while to focus the accuracy because we have a camera it's a $100 million camera that's 423 miles up there going 17,000 miles an hour. So it's kind of hard to focus this thing. You focus it not by looking at the ground, you look at the stars, like old celestial navigation. And we're almost done with that. In fact, we've gotten to a point with our accuracy that a lot of the non-governmental clients want it. The Google would love it right now because it's already more accurate than most satellites. We just want it to be the best in the world. So I'm in a position where I've got to work with our engineers and say, okay, stop tinkering, guys. You know, the customers want it now. The resolution is the best in the world. The accuracy is acceptable to most of the customers. But I think what we'll do is in the next couple of weeks, we'll release imagery to the U.S. government. They'll then take a process of a couple of weeks to certify it. So in a month or two, we should start releasing this imagery publicly and selling it. And I think that, you know, this is the beginning of 2009. I think that by the end of 2009, we'll look back and say, geez, that was an intense period. People were working around the clock. But, gosh, wasn't it great, because it's up and running and it's the best in the world. So a couple of months from now, we'll all look back and this will seem like, you know, it was hard back then, but now it's wonderful to have the camera up and working.
This is the state of an entrepreneur, right? You always want something to be better. It's
yes.
not good enough. I'm supposed to make more this year. I didn't
Absolutely.
Make enough, and I'm still number one on the list.
Well, there's so much we can do. I mean, Mark and I were looking at all the roads as we drove over here. It's pretty easy to say, if you have roads, there's less place for rainwater to go. Our satellite can show you, by looking at the infrared, sensor, we can show you where there's vegetation, where there's no vegetation. Obviously, there's been a higher propensity to flooding lately. Whether or not you believe in climate change, some people think that minute changes in the world's climate have led to a higher propensity to flooding. Well, we can show people with our satellites. Here there's more vegetation, more permeable surface, rainwater can run off. Here there's less permeable surface, you might have a higher risk of flooding. That's a whole new application we weren't in before. Ethanol. We recently were asked by a big food company to monitor their corn crops in Brazil. Well, that's all because of ethanol. We've done a lot of work on disaster relief. People never thought about using us for disaster relief before, but Katrina, the tsunami, the earthquake in Sichuan, they called us and said, do you have before pictures so we know where the roads and bridges were, and do you have an after picture to show where it's been wiped out? So there are all sorts of new applications that are tremendously exciting, and I think one of the most challenging aspects of where we are now is we've got a lot of cash, we're making money, we're growing fast. Where do we go next? We just hired a chief technology officer because there are so many different applications we can use. And there's such a rapid development in cloud technology. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's distributing information through the internet so that you're not tied to a desktop. We're looking at that so that a relief worker in Sichuan doesn't have to go to a desktop to get our information. They can get it on a handheld device. Very exciting time to be in this business.
So you have a lot of decision-making around what markets to enter. Which ones do you think will grow the most?
Yeah, that's we spent a lot of time analyzing that. Since we have capital, and since my background is mergers and acquisitions, a natural area would be acquisitions. And right now, there are a lot of smaller venture-backed companies that are, you know, they've gone through maybe one round, two rounds of capital, and they're looking for that next round of capital. And right now, unfortunately, the financial markets aren't terribly accommodating, as you know. So having capital is a great place to be right now. So we're trying to decide which way we grow, by investment or acquisition.
We're speaking with Matt O'Connell from GOI, and you're located in Virginia. Your company is located in Virginia?
Yeah, GOI is headquartered in Dulles, right near Dulles Airport.
How many employees?
About 500 now.
500. Excellent. And we're talking about all the, you know, kind of different decisions that you can make over the next few years for GOI. Now, the other thing I was going to ask you about is you got a law degree from UVA. That's your kind of background. So you're a lawyer by trade.
I started off on Wall Street doing work for, I worked for a big Wall Street law firm, but I did mergers and acquisitions, and I did a lot of venture capital investing for entrepreneurs. I always liked working with entrepreneurs, and I figured I'd learn from watching them and looking at them, and then I'd become one.
Oh, so you knew that was the plan from the beginning.
I've always wanted to be one.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's fun making up new stuff.
Who has the easier job?
The lawyer's job is much easier because it's a hard job, but thinking of new things and deciding which area will work and then convincing people to do something is crazy. As I said before, when my wife said, you're going to work for GOI and you're going to put it into bankruptcy, convincing people to follow you toward a vision that they can't see, that you can see, that's hard.
Yep. Excellent. That's a great kind of analysis. We're speaking with Matt O'Connell from GOI. Matt, when we return, I want to talk to you about a couple things. One, you were named Entrepreneur of the Year by Ernst & Young for communications in the DC region, and I got to ask you your leadership philosophy. So we'll get into that all when we return on the Leader Spot. We're speaking with the CEO of GOI. They were ranked number 10 on Deloitte's Technology Fast 50. When we return, we're going to talk as well with the CEO of Aptex, David Earhart. Aptex was named number 174 on Deloitte's 2008 Technology Fast 500. So it's a Deloitte Technology Day here on the Leader Spot. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith. Of course, all these interviews, Matt's interview and other CEO interviews, over 170 interviews we have now on the Leader's Spot.com. You can find it all at theleaderspot.com.
The Leader's Spot with Rebecca Blacksmith, now playing at theleaderspot.com.
The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax Hotel near I-66 and 50 provides state-of-the-art guest rooms with complimentary high-speed internet access, a full-service restaurant, business meeting and banquet rooms for up to 300 guests, with a professional staff that stays focused on the details so you don't have to, and full banquet catering. Call 703-385-7774 for guest rooms, meeting space, or special events at this award-winning hotel. That's 703-385-7774. The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax.
We're back here in the Leader Spot studio with the CEO, President, and Director of GOI, Matt O'Connell. Matt, in 2007, you were named Entrepreneur of the Year by Ernst & Young for Communications in the Washington, D.C. region. What are some of the skills that made you an exceptional entrepreneur?
Well, I think the primary skill was finding a good team that could do all the hard work that earned They're the ones that earned that award, really. I think that going back to, as I said, before law school, I played in bands, and knowing how to thrive in chaos is important. But also, having worked as a lawyer and worked with entrepreneurs, I saw the ones that were successful and unsuccessful. Talking beforehand, I'll give my next speaker an ad. He said, stick to your knitting. And everybody who's been in this business knows that you got to stick to your knitting, focus on your core strengths. I've always tried to lead by example, so we work hard. We're incredibly disciplined. Ethics are really strong. You can't mess around. Our biggest customers are governments, and governments have to trust you implicitly. So everything we do has to be credible.
You mentioned that you saw a pattern of what makes successful entrepreneurs, but what makes the failed ones. So what's a key to that?
Well, the opposite of sticking to your knitting. Too many small companies try to do too many different things, and they stray from their core. They spend too much. You can't spend too much. And they don't have the will to keep going. We were chatting at the break about triathlons. I do triathlon, and actually one of our first big acquisitions, the code name was Triathlon, because it involved so many things. In acquisitions, you got to find the deal, you got to finance the deal, and then you got to do the integration. A lot of people don't know how hard the integration is, but getting different cultures to blend is really tough.
That's been a common theme. We've heard everyone say culture matters.
Well, a lot of the commentators say that where Carly Fiorina went wrong was not in the way she did the deal, but the fact that she didn't really complete the cultural integration. I'm not sure if that's true, but that's what a lot of the commentators say.
Beyond this, what's your leadership philosophy?
Well, as I said, lead by example work hard, be disciplined, stick to your core, and keep pushing. There's so much out there. It's really exciting. My wife says one of my failures is that I can never stop and celebrate the moment. I'm always, you go over a hurdle and you look at the next hurdle. But if you have a small company and talented people, there's really no limit to what you can achieve.
You always want to keep the next level. You want to get to the top of Mount Everest.
Absolutely.
And your company just sponsored someone to climb Mount Everest, right?
Just sponsored a guy to climb Mount Everest, and that's why I'm going to sign off now and go back and see that guy.
Excellent, excellent. Before we go, I got to ask you another question. What leadership decisions have you made that you wish you could change now?
Oh, I think that... we've been lucky in that we've made a lot of the right decisions. I think I probably held on to some people too long because we were a tiny company. When I showed up, we were 60 people. And those 60 people had been a spinoff from a larger company. And they didn't necessarily have the skill sets. We're publicly traded now on NASDAQ. And there were some people, especially, for instance, in finance and accounting, we probably should have gone to a bigger company model earlier. But you're naturally protective of your people, and you want to keep them around as long as you can. And I think sometimes in an effort to protect people and give them a lot of rope, I may have hurt the enterprise a little bit. But we've been lucky in that we've avoided a lot of big, expensive mistakes. Everybody makes some little mistakes. I mean, we should have upgraded our IT system sooner, stuff mm-hmm. like that. You were asking earlier about using yesterday's tools to solve tomorrow's problems. I finally said to our head of communications, Mark Brenner, you got to upgrade our website. We're a technology company. It has to be as cool as we are. And I think it took us a while to make our own cultural change. We had a lot of engineers, and we had to evolve from an aerospace and defense mindset into an information services company mindset. That's taken a while, and I wish we had kind of pushed that earlier.
Excellent. And another question I had for you, and I'm kind of jumping back to an earlier thought, but you talked about how the U.S. government was one of your big clients after mm-hmm. the bankruptcy, $500 million. Mm-hmm. How did you get them, you know, you did the bankruptcy in January and then they signed on in September. How did you get them to believe in you when they're seeing what's going on?
Heaven only knows. I really can't remember. I mean, I think part of it was that we, as I said, always strive hard for credibility. So we, at that time, we built a good business model. It was defensible. And we focused on what the customer wanted. That's very important. I learned that at Sony. Always focus on what the customer wants. It's very easy to think about what you have to sell them. There's a great ad by IBM right now, which is stop selling what you have. Start asking what they need. And we've been trying to drive that into our people's heads for years. And that helped us win that contract. I think that the big aerospace and defense folks came in and said, we know how to run a government program. Let us tell you what you need. And that's not what we did. We kept saying, what do you want? What mm-hmm. do you need? Then, of course, you have to discipline the customers because I think every customer I've always met wants to get a Ferrari and pay for a Hyundai. Mm-hmm. And you have to sort of bridge that gap with them and say, you know, you don't actually have the money for a Ferrari. You have the money for a Hyundai, so what can we do here?
Excellent. Well, I appreciate talking to you, Matt, very much.
My pleasure, Rebecca, and I wish I could stick around and listen to David speak about aptics, but I think you guys will have fun, so I'll slide out.
We'll take care of them.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Good luck.
GOI here on the Leader Spot. We're speaking with Matt O'Connell. He's a CEO, President, and Director of GOI, and on the NASDAQ, GEOY. And the Leader Spot is supported by businesses actively serving the leadership community of Washington, D.C., WOW Services Group, Divine Inspiration Salon, and Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs, as well as Diamond Sponsors, Market Point, and Dennis Cole Architects. If you're a business interested in communicating your brand directly to the business and leadership community, consider sponsorship of the Leader's Spot. We're in studio in the Leader Spot, on air and online at theleadersspot.com. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, as I said.